You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It is episode 213 of The Dice Men Cometh, on tonight the 17th of May. Now, The Dice Men Cometh is a show all about card games, all about dice games, all about role-playing games, all about things you can play on a table, do all that stuff with people. And this time last week, we were all sitting here.
Yes.
Myself, Garth, that one Mark and that one Leon, talking about how much rain was falling down, and it's sprinkling a little bit today. But, gentlemen, in the last week, it's rained a lot. My car's been written off because of the rain. Yep. My garage has to be destroyed because of the rain. Thankfully, though, I lost zero board games in
Fantastic.
The devastation. So I may not have somewhere to drive to. I may not have somewhere to store that vehicle that I don't have anymore. But I might be able to convert my new garage into a man cave.
Oh, yeah.
Always on the cards. Lovely.
So, look, tonight's episode is chock-a-block again, and like last week, we are going back to space!
We love a bit of space, evidently.
In this week's What We Have Been Playing, Mark, you will talk about all those juicy Kickstarters yes. that caused you to spend
yep.
more money.
Yep.
And then we might have to mention in this week that the Spiel games have been nominated for 2018. The Kinderspiel, the Kennerspiel, and obviously the Spiel des Jahres, the big one. So no doubt we will talk about that.
The second biggest, most important board game award in the world behind the Kangas.
It is earth-shattering. So the other thing I want to talk about very, very briefly is, again, harking back to last week, that up until the Kangas, the Dice Men have never had so much power over the result of something, because we gave the Expanse board game a review that was, it's all right, last week. And what happens since then? Show gets cancelled.
Yeah, canceled. That's right.
So, gentlemen, just want to let you know we have a lot of power.
NASA should be worried tonight when we start talking about space games.
Exactly. So before we start that conversation,
and completely trash the Game of Thrones board game, hint, hint, we have emails, send us money. Of course we don't take bribes. Yes, we do. Hint, hint.
So look, needless to say, thanks Area 52 for sponsoring us yet again. Thanks Edge Radio 99.3 FM for having us on. We will throw to a song and then we will talk about what we have been playing this week. All that and more on The Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
And with The Dice Men Cometh here, that was Sand Dollars with Silence is Gold. Now, if silence is gold, then Leon,
yes.
what you're about to tell us must be worth billions.
Okay.
Because it's way better than gold.
It certainly is. Now, we're going to talk about a game. We kind of lied a bit in our section we always do at the start, what we've been playing lately. We haven't actually played this lately.
Not lately, but we've played it a bit.
We've played it quite a bit, and the reason is because, I'm going to just bury the lead, it is one of the best board games in the hobby in history, and it is one of our collective favourites for at least some of us that have intelligence.
Some people, oh! That's what some people say.
So anyway, we're talking about Inish again, are we?
Now, we should play that again. Okay,
or not.
We are talking about the monster that is Cosmic Encounter.
Yeah.
So before I tell you about how the game plays quickly and some interesting facts, I'm going to give you a little history lesson, lads.
Ooh.
Right, so the original version of Cosmic Encounter had only 6 aliens in it and was designed between a 2 to 6 player game. A 2-player game of Cosmic Encounter.
Oh, my thank goodness. You
I mean, I'm going to fight you. Would you like to join me in fighting you?
Yes. Then who wins? Duh. Play something else. Anyway, this edition was nearly published by Parker Brothers. Now, can you imagine the state of the board gaming world if that was true? If Cosmic Encounter back then, and when I say back then, I'm talking the mid-70s.
Yeah, wow.
Now, we're going to talk about that in a second. So we ended up, that deal fell through, so the designers founded Aeon Products Incorporated to publish it themselves, which they did, and the first edition was released in 1977, which is 10 years before I was born. Garth, what were you doing in 77?
I was 2 years from being born. Mark, what about you? How far away from being born were you?
How many years in the Navy were you at this point?
I was 10.
Oh, anyway. So you could have very much got onto this. Anyway, it allowed only up to 4 players, which is... and included 15 alien powers. But over the next 5 years, in 1977, so 77 to 82, it released 9 expansions. Now, you think expansions are a new thing in your video game world, your board gaming world. 77, they were releasing expansions for this. Mm. And 77, that's before...
Star Wars came out in 77.
I was going to say, this. I don't know if this is before D&D, but it's a very similar kind of area. So the idea of expansions back then is kind of crazy. So they released all this stuff. Ended up having 60-odd alien powers. They ended up having components for 5th and 6th player. A few different rules were added, which are still in the modern game this day. And I've been told from some of our listeners that have played this version and still have this version that the art is really unique and interesting, mm-hmm. and they still like that art compared to the one that is today. In 86, they republished again, pretty much the same version, but it was by West End Games in America, and in UK it was actually published by Games Workshop. That edition kind of didn't really do much. But in 1991, Mayfair Games brought out, at the time, the most successful version of the game. There was an expansion the next year called More Cosmic Encounter,
hey!
Which is a hell of a name for
That's
an expansion.
Creative.
And a stripped-down introductory version simply called Simply Cosmic.
Not my first Cosmic Encounter.
No, Simply Cosmic in 1995.
Oh.
Yeah, and they had lots of different powers and stuff as well, and then many, many, many things that would go on again to be in this game. And if you had everything of that edition, you could play up to 10 people, which is...
That'd be chaos.
Interesting and sort of crazy at the same time.
Still better than 2.
True, very much. In the year 2000, Avalon Hill, at the time, a division of Hasbro... They brought out a simplified version of the game. However, it had extremely high production values. If you've seen this, the box looks cool. The pieces look real. This is the first time plastic came in instead of like random cardboard chits. It only had 20 alien powers and received no expansions. So that kind of died, essentially. Then, however, August 17th, 2007, Fantasy Flight announced plans to reprint the game in 2008. And game designer Kevin Wilson, who at the time... would just come off the 3 games he'd just been involved in before this: Game of Thrones,
sure,
the first edition, Descent, and Arkham Horror.
Yeah, wow.
They're the 3 games he did before he said, "I'm going to have a crack at redesigning Cosmic Encounter." So he's done a bit of all right, and he's been involved in literally 100 games since then. I don't think he's been the lead designer on nearly any of them, but he's had his hands in a lot of different.
But we will be playing one of his games tonight after the show.
Well, there you go. Anyway, so they talked about the game, and there was a version of at Gen Con 2008, and then it was released in December. It came with 50 aliens straight off the bat. As well as various different other things, and it played up to 5 players. And then since 2008, there has been 6 expansions released, which I will talk about a little bit later. Now, anybody out there who hasn't played it, I'd say stop listening and just go play it. What on earth are you doing? For the love of God, it's one of the Mount Rushmore, as far as I'm concerned.
I completely agree, and the joy of it is hopefully what you will be able to explain shortly, is that you can talk about this game and explain the rules in almost no time.
Yep.
Because it's all about the people sitting around the table.
Yes, exactly. And it is a game. The replay value with this game is... there's nothing, I don't think. It's second to none. I don't think there is anything out there that has the replay of this game. So, what you basically do is everybody is given an alien, or sometimes 2, once you've played it a few times, and it's a bit more fun that way. And you get these planets in front of you. It's 5 or 6, I believe, and you get little plastic ships in front of you. This is the new version, the one that everybody... it's still in print now, the one that everybody plays. So, on your turn, so when it comes around to your turn, what you do is you draw a card called Destiny. And now, this tells you who you're going to go up against, which is... people might think it's only a small thing. It is a brilliant mechanic of this game because it stops the "I'm just going to dogpile on this person."
Correct.
That I beat this person badly, the next person goes, "Well, I'm going to beat them badly too," and so on and so on. We change the entire dynamic of this game. But since it is random, the person that helped you in the last battle, you think, "Yeah, we're going to be allies. We're going to win this together," which can happen in this game. You're forced to turn on each other.
Exactly. And you can also flip over a card and it's your own colour.
Yes.
So that again changes the decision making. And then there are the wilds that are thrown in there just to throw a little bit of variation again.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so much fun flipping over those cards.
So then you get the pointy Hypergate game component. You point it to one of their planets. If they've got no ships defending that planet, you just get it straight away.
Woo-hoo.
Huzzah. But most likely there's normally at least one ship sitting there. And then you decide how many ships you're going to send. And then... you are the offender, and the person you're going up against is the defender. You then ask around the table of people who you would like to come with you. So you do that, the defender goes first, then the offence person goes, and then people actually make their decision. based on who wants to go with who. And then you've got the planning phase. You each have a deck... Sorry, a deck. You each have a hand of cards, which shows things like extra attack power. And I'm not going to go into this because there's so many different kinds. And you each choose a card to play. The main ones are the attack cards as well as the negotiate cards.
And the thing is with those attack cards is that the majority of them have got a number on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the number might be anywhere from zero up to a really, really high number.
40, I think, is the biggest.
And... no one's got any idea what you're going to be playing. You'll play this card face down and it could be playing a 0-1 or a 40 or anywhere in between. The scope on those cards is huge.
Yeah, and that's and even with just the base game, that is true. Once you add the expansions and stuff, which we'll again talk about in a minute, it changes things completely. So then you reveal the cards. If they've both been attack cards, you just basically see who's got the highest. And then that person wins. If you're on the offense, you will get a point and a ship on their planet. If the defense wins, your guys kind of get destroyed and go to the middle of the board, which is called the warp, which is where your dead ships go. And the people that came with you, sometimes they get rewards, whether they helped defend or helped attack, that kind of jazz. And then you, if you were successful and you were the attacker, you can go again. You get to have a second turn, which again, you go from the start. You draw a destiny card and go from there. If you lost... it moves on to the next player. And it's that simple. That's how the game works.
Correct. And you say it quite sort of bluntly there, Leon, and you get a point. But the point is, first to five wins.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're playing for dozens and dozens of points. It's first to five, and you could potentially get 2 points on every one of your turns if you have two successful attacks every turn. Potentially.
Mm.
But it doesn't work that well.
No.
And that's the joy of the game being all about who plays around the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. And the fact is, this game can end before you've actually had a turn, which sounds, people would go, well, that game's broken. I would never play that. That is almost the equivalent of saying, well, it's got roll and move, so I'm not going to play it. No, trust me. I've played in games where this has happened to me, and it works because everyone is always involved in everything that's going on the table. Mainly it's just a lot of chat and a lot of posture and whatever else, but still fun nonetheless.
And I think that's where you said, Garth, it relies so much on the group of people, because if it is, if it's got a, if you're in a group of people where heads down, oh, what am I going to do to win this? You've got no hope because it will be over before you realise, and the group really has to band together at various different times to stop a runaway leader, which most of the time they will do.
Yep. Now, I'm going to talk about expansions, because expansions for this game, again, I would possibly argue, are maybe the most important game in our hobby that has expansions involved. And the reason I say that is because the first one that came out in 2010, so 2 years after the base game that came out, the Incursion expansion, it comes with an extra player, so it adds the game up to six, and it comes with the rewards deck. Now, the rewards deck, I have never played this game without. I don't think I've ever seen it played without the rewards deck. What that basically is that if you help somebody defend a planet, you normally get to draw some cards or get some of your ships back from a warp. You can draw from this rewards deck, which has strong cards in it. They have higher attack cards, and they have cards that do even wackier, crazy things. So that's not in the base game, but that is in the first expansion. So I'm saying right now that if you like this game and you go to buy this game, you buy that first expansion. There's not even an if, but, or maybe. I would almost flat out say, if you're not going to buy this expansion, don't buy the base game.
Thing is, I'm trying to find them.
Yeah.
And the expansions are very hit and miss to be able to get, especially for a game now that is approaching over 10 years old since the last edition was printed.
Yeah, and then just quickly going through the other one. So you've got Cosmic Conflict, which again adds another player. So you could have up to seven, and that has the black characters. Then there's the Hazard deck and the Cosmic Quakes, which add an extra... they're all modules, so you can add stuff in if you want. It's up to you. And I've played games with some added in, some not, and it's always kind of fun. You can play a base game of this with nothing added, except the rewards deck. That's pretty much a must, and you'll be laughing. Then there's Cosmic Alliance, which, again, another extra player, so you could play up to eight altogether at the moment. So that adds some things, as well as some rules for team play, which I've not yet done.
No, I haven't.
I would be interesting to play that. Then Cosmic Storm, which adds the space stations, and what they are is you use them, they're like satellites that go around certain planets you have and help you defend them. So that's an interesting one you can add. Cosmic Dominion, which adds even more cards to the reward deck, so you could have a double reward deck, which is very, very important. And then finally, only a couple of years ago, is Cosmic Aeons, which added something interesting, which is the Hidden Alliance dial, which is in that phase where you ask people for alliances, they flat out say, I'm going with you, by putting their ships on one side of the warp or the other. They add this dial, the Hidden Alliance dial, where you can choose who you're going to go with and how many ships you're sending, and everyone reveals them simultaneously.
Ooh, which that changes it.
Which I haven't actually played with, I don't think, but I would like to, because I do own all these expansions.
Yeah, because the thing is, with the fact that when you're the attacker and you're going up against the defender, you get to choose which people around the table you want to invite. So it's not just a free-for-all. It's not everyone's involved in the battle. It is, as the defender, it'll say, okay, well, Mark, I want you. Leon, no, thanks. I'll take this person.
Yep.
And then the attacker can go, well, I'll also take you.
Yep.
But no, I'm still not going to take you, Leon.
Yep.
And the person who's been offered the ability to join in for the defense or the attack gets to make a really powerful decision. And then they're basically saying, yes, I'll be part of your side, but they're not saying, okay, well, I'm going to commit five ships or three ships. They could commit one.
Yes.
And it's still, it's like, oh, what is it going to happen?
And they can throw in cards as well, because there's reinforcement cards you can have in your deck. And there's also a thing I haven't even talked about, which is the flares, which is every single alien has a special flare card, which is like a super ability that every time you play, they're in the deck, and you can get a flare card for somebody else's alien, and you can play them, and they come back to your hand, so they're pretty handy. But if you get your own flare card, it becomes like a super, super ability. And that's another thing that's added to it. So as I said before, the base game, 50 aliens. With all the expansions, 195.
Wow.
And there is one promo expansion, which came out a few years ago, called The Demon, which I've never even seen or heard of until I was researching today, but now, of course, I want, because, you know, I'm very metal.
What the fix?
And there's also talk of another expansion coming out soon. So before another interesting fact I wanted to tell you, I'm going to say the one negative I have about this game is that the base game, you can play, it's only set up to play between three and five people. Five players is the minimum for this game, as far as I'm concerned. If somebody whipped this out and said, I love Cosmic Encounter, this is great, there's only four of us here. I mean, if they were really keen, I'd go, sure, because I love this game. But no, four players, there is a million other games out there, and this game is not for four players. You need that swing vote. You need...
It's one of those games where you need an uneven number, I think, just to give enough give and take, because otherwise you potentially have two people on each side or three people on each side.
Yeah.
I think a bit of variation is good.
I don't know about... I probably agree, because five and seven is probably where it's at.
Yeah.
But six and... I don't know if I've played eight, but I've played five, I've played six, I've played seven, and I've had no issue with any of them. Like I said, I've even had games where I've had that and haven't had a turn, but it doesn't bother me at all.
No.
So, yes, so that's the way to do it. So to do that, though, you need to have at least one, if not the first three expansions, which I would recommend anyway. None of these expansions
are
not worth getting.
$30.
Yeah, they
ain't
much.
Bucks,
they ain't much.
And it's worth its weight in gold, because if this game at all appeals to you, you will play the crap out of it.
Yeah, and like I said, the replay value, you could, if you have a good group, I think we mentioned them before, if you have a good group of friends that all like this game, you have this game and say one expansion just for a laugh, even though I'd recommend getting all of them, you can play this game every weekend till the day you die. It'll be different every time.
Exactly. And the thing that makes it so different is out of those, 50 to almost 200 aliens, each of them have unique abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them are game-breaking.
Yes.
And what I love about it, apart from just those simple factors, is that they also rank them in the traffic light system. You've got your green aliens, your yellow aliens, and your red aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And that is color-coded to how messed up they're going to make the game.
How difficult they are to comprehend.
So you can start with teaching players with the green aliens that might just allow you to draw an extra card or do a simple thing, all the way up to the red aliens that just screw the game over, break it up completely. But that's where hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
Because it changes goals for certain players. It just destroys what you think this game is going to be. But I'm yet to see an experience where that is a negative.
Mm.
Every one of these aliens, regardless of whether it's deliberate or just good fortune, are balanced.
Yeah, it works out pretty well. And as I said before, with all these expansions, even though some of them add certain decks or certain side gameplay things that I'm like not a big fan of some of them, every single expansion adds more aliens. So that's why they're all worth getting, which is a very clever way of doing it. And this game has, since I said it's been out for that long, it has influenced so many other games. Like specifically, there was design teams that have, for games like Illuminati, Talisman, Arkham/Eldritch Horror, these people that have flat out said, what's the game that inspired this series the most or inspired you even to get into this hobby? And they've said that. And Richard Garfield, who is, again, a monster in the business, the man who designed Magic the Gathering, if they said, what's the one game which helped you design Magic the Gathering? Even though that's a fantasy game and it's a collectible card game, he cited Cosmic Encounter as the reason behind Magic the Gathering. Yeah. And as I said, it's got a space theme to it, but the space theme isn't serious. The space theme is really goofy and kind of fun, very Hitchhiker's Guide type space theme.
Oh, the cartoon sort of start of the aliens is hilarious. Because you've got just crazy.
Some of the powers are like they're really nasty, kind of crazy looking aliens, whereas some of them are really cute. There's one called literally called like Squee, which is like this big puff, and one called Love and stuff like that. And there's a Game of Thrones version of this, which we haven't played, and I don't think's got a huge reception. It's been out for like 3 years now.
I was really surprised because I was so excited when this first was announced, and I thought, well, that's it. That's the copy that most people are going to get because Game of Thrones is so hot right now.
Yeah.
But you're right. It just didn't go and explode the gaming world like I thought it would. It had these beautiful little crown plastic chips that I thought, people get behind that, but I just don't see that being played as much as good old original Cosmic.
Well, at the end of the day, gamers will go for Cosmic all the time because they know how good it is, and people that are non-gamers will go for the theme of Game of Thrones, and they might enjoy it, but it's since they're not really gamers, they probably couldn't care that it's based off a really good game.
Yeah.
There's one thing I do want to mention. Tom Vassell of the Dice Tower, this is his favourite game of all time, until recently, where Gloomhaven's maybe... But he put up a video series called Why I Love This Game. He's done quite a few of them now, but it started with Cosmic Encounter. So that's something if people who haven't played this that are interested after what we've said want to check out. It's something I recommend. It's just 10 minutes of him saying why it's so amazing. And then the final thing I want to mention, before we just chat about our general feelings, on BGG, what it's ranked on BGG, it's ranked 101.
Oh, what?
So I put it to you, our lovely listeners, you've all failed in life and everything. What is wrong with us as a gaming group of people? And I'm talking about the millions of us around the world that sit around a gaming table every week that we're trying to tell people this is not even in the 100 best games of all time. We are out of our collective minds. This needs to be fixed. And the next time I check this after this episode comes out, it bloody well better be fixed.
All right. Well, I guarantee that I'll go and put my nomination in for that game because... It is, if not my favourite game, in the top two or three because...
Well, you voted it your game of the year 2 years ago.
Exactly right.
Even though it's a 40-year-old game.
I know, and it's because it's so bloody simple. It's so easy to play, and it's all about the negotiation. And it's no secret the negotiation is my cup of tea kind of game. I love the conversation side of it. I love the fact that I am going to try and screw over people. They're definitely going to screw over me. And we'll have a whole bunch of laughter as long as everyone leaves it at the table. And that's the caveat. This is a game that I have tried to play with people like my parents. My dad couldn't give a rat's ass because he just can't be bothered negotiating. He'll just go, yep, nah, whatever. And it's just not fun. You need people who are prepared to go all in a negotiation because it is fun.
Yeah, but also I don't think it's that negative in the sense that I've had games of this where people have... I mean, you can't really gang up on people too much, but you can in a kind of sense. I've had that kind of happen to me, but this is one of those very rare games where it doesn't bother me in the slightest. It absolutely doesn't, because it's just based off that situation, the powers that people have, the way that the game is going. If people are playing the game properly, playing to win for themselves and not just being jerks, then the next game could be completely opposite. Those people that were ganging up against me might go, we need him on our side, or now it could be completely different where everyone else gangs up on them. So it's a negotiation game where pretty much you can't really take it personally because the game picks where you're going to go and what you're going
to
do.
And for me, a lot of the time, I don't really care who wins.
No.
I'll fight tooth and nail to have my alien race try and be up there in the ranks, but it's just the spectacle of it. I cannot wait. We will be playing this at BorderCon. Richard, bring that set because it is beautiful.
It's happening.
I will be at that table because it's such a highlight of BorderCon every year.
And it's just the highlight of the gaming world. Now, Mark, you've been rather quiet. What's going on?
Yeah, I have, Leon.
Why?
It's Cosmic Encounter. It's a game.
It's a game.
Yeah, it's a game. Look,
you've got to give us reasons for this, man.
I've been around the hobby a while, and I had some quite bad experiences early on with it, playing with people who, look at it, you'd have to be honest to say, they weren't fun to play most games with.
Okay.
But this sort of game particularly, because they just rode roughshod over the top of it, and particularly because a lot of the time these were new groups that were forming and this person was very experienced, they would basically coach everyone in what to do.
Yeah.
Alpha gaming, this sort of game, drove me totally mad. And I guess I got quite turned off it.
Is that because you want to be the alpha gamer?
You can't have another one.
That's right. There can be only one. But in terms of, as you said, if you can't get ganged up on, well, I sort of know. I have the experience of, you know, because I'm a person who wins a lot of games, that people go, oh, now it's our chance to get back at Mark. Let's kick him down and beat him up and all that.
And he wonders why.
So I often have that experience in this game. But, you know, I have had a lot of fun. It wouldn't be in my top 20 games.
If I had 5 to 8 people and we were deserted on a desert island, it'd probably be the game I would take, and that's it.
Yeah, see, I'd split into two groups and play two really good games.
Well, you can't. You can only take one game.
Well, what game would you take instead of this?
I don't know. Lots.
Like? I've never heard of Lots. Is that the one where you're picking?
That's where you throw dice. They did, they did it when Jesus was on the cross.
Oh, right.
Yeah. All right, guys. So, look, we better wrap this conversation up. Needless to say, Cosmic Encounter is a behemoth. It is at the top of the pile for certainly for myself.
Oh, close to the top.
And for a lot of gamers who know a lot about gaming, Mark. So you should educate yourself a bit about that. Leon, yes. Got any final words for us?
No, it's just that if you want to play it online, you can also play it through Tabletop Simulator for the last couple of years. I don't know why you would, because after hearing us talk about this and you're going, I haven't played that yet, go buy it. What are you doing? If you buy any other game after this talk and you haven't played this game, you're wrong at life.
Exactly. And if you buy it and don't like it, Mark will probably buy it off you.
Yeah, definitely. He stacks. He loves it stockpiling.
All right. Thanks very much, Leon. Well, look, we are the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We do thank Area 52.
Who do have a copy of this game.
There you go. We will be back after this song so Mark can tell you how to spend more money that you've worked so hard for.
That was Superimposed Flowers on Palestine and Broken Faces, but of course you all knew that, with their song Silver Lake on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. They are a local Tassie act. And speaking of local and Tassie, you can pop yourself into Area 52. I was in there just before the show, and they got a whole crate of fresh games in there that I nearly bought half of them, but I showed some self-control. They just got a copy of Century Spice Road, the Golem Edition.
Ooh.
And they had, what else they had? They had Arboretum, which I looked at. They had Crystal Clan, several copies of that, which we talked about with the artist himself a few weeks ago.
Marty, yeah.
Indeed he do. So get in there and have a look. But if you want to spend your money online and play a game in about 18 months, we've got Marky Boy for you.
There is a bit of wait time these days on the Kickstarters, because the love kickstarts again. Yeah, that's right.
We're so warm.
USB stick in the car. Look, I want to firstly do a congratulations. By the time you listen to this podcast, the Slinky Gibbon game, Eye in the Fourth Wall, will have finished on Kickstarter. As we are live here, it has 7 hours to go. They've raised over $80,000 with almost 1,700 backers.
Wow.
The target was only $13,000. So they've smashed it by about 500 or 600%.
That's crazy.
Amazing work for a great little Aussie game. So congratulations, guys. We did talk about that one on the show.
That's amazing. I'm surprised at how successful that has been.
Yeah, it just shows you can't pick. And likewise, we did talk about Darwin's Choice last week. They are now, they've still got 20 days to go. They are over 400% funded. They're closing in on 100,000. I think they're only after about 20,000 or 25,000.
That's 100,000 euro.
Yeah, that's right. So, all my figures are in Australian dollars.
Oh, Australian dollars.
There you go.
Wow. Well, when you can make a tapir dolphin chicken lobster.
With dingo nipples.
That's right.
Ah, dingo nipples. That's right.
Yeah. Now, look, a couple of little interesting Aussie Kickstarters. Very light on in the board game department we are this week. But if you're into your space marine type mini war games, you might be interested in a wargaming corridor set from BP Laser out of Brisbane. They do laser cut MDF space station diorama thingies. Basically,
thingies, you say?
Yeah, basically table stuff that you can move around. So like it's like you're on the inside of a spaceship and there's corridors and doors and passageways and things like that made out of your little MDF fiber, beautifully laser cut, because obviously they...
And are they selling the product or are they selling the files to be able to...
No, so they sell the bits. And you can start from as low as $5 for like one bit, and you can put massive ones together and build whole space stations.
So it could come in handy for the Star Realms RPG, perhaps.
Yeah, it's more. I mean, it's more for your 40k and things like that. But
yeah, but the people,
absolutely,
the people that RPG with miniatures, which is plenty.
And look, it's already well funded. It's still got 13 days to go. But if you're into those sort of games, check that one out. Our good friends at Campaign Coins in Melbourne, headed up by great friend of the show, Mark Morrison, they have the Metal Meeple. So normally they do those amazing metal coins. These are the Metal Meeples, your very traditional meeples. You can get them in 6 different colours. The colours all have different patterns as well, so that if you are colourblind or have problems seeing colours, you can distinguish by the patterns. Yeah. But then there's also 6 different types of metal.
I like 6 different types of metal.
So, and you can add multiple sets. I
Is
think,
there a Nickelback type?
You are.
Anyway, let's get back on nickel track.
Watch.
So there's a, you can get a $30 set, which will basically get you 8 of one colour or 6 one each of the colours, and you can go from there. You can go crazy. They're 16 mil high, 16 mil wide, and 10 mil thick. So these are not fiddly. They're your big, chunky sort of Carcassonne. Carcassonne. Charters Con.
So it's thick metal.
Yeah, Carcassonne-style meeples. Really lovely. That one has about 14 days to go, and again, it's already well and truly funded.
I have thought very hard about getting these because having your own meeples, is it cool? I'm not sure. I think if I'm the guy who turns up to a game with my own personalised set of meeples, is that cool? Does that make me like the king amongst the other people at the table, or does it take me maybe a bit too far?
Well, the problem is if you play green and you turn up with your special green meeples and then someone else wants to play green and they
I'll be playing metal.
I would offer a comment, but after your previous comment, my brain is just full of hate at the moment. I'm just trying to think of anything else but.
I am very close to backing a set of these just because they do look awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Then also from Australia, we have the Dangerous Ladies. I mean, you know, not only do we have dangerous snakes, dangerous spiders, dangerous sharks, dangerous jellyfish, but now apparently in Australia we have dangerous ladies.
We didn't need Kickstarter to tell us that. am I right, fellas?
Anyway, so these are 35 mil and 75 mil highly detailed resin miniatures. I'm not going to go into what the highly detailed bits are, but, you know, I guess if you're a miniatures collector, these things, you know, amazing sculpts. I guess they're more for your
teenage boys.
Yeah, for your a lot of people collect this sort of stuff. Anyway, they're from Australia.
Sorry, this is not good radio when I say who is that. But that is the pose from the 100-foot woman or something right at the very top, isn't it?
No, that's Raquel Welch. Out of, what is it, like 70,000 BC or
it's,
the day
that was the Shawshank Redemption poster.
So yeah, so there's a few different poses, and as they raise more money, they're going to unlock more. Although they've only raised about close to $1,500 of the 8,000 they need. It does only have 25 days to go, and look, it's got to be said, it's a super niche market. But hey, I like to give a shout out to all the Aussies on Kickstarter, so I'm going to give a shout out to them. Eclipse Miniatures, good luck with that one. Then we also have Martin Wallace, friend of the show. We can call him Australia now because he lives here.
He does.
Was from the UK, then lived in New Zealand. He's doing the rounds. Anyway, he's got his game, Lincoln, which is a 2-player card-driven war game about the American Civil War. I tell you what, this edition looks absolutely amazing. Beautifully produced by PSC, Plastic Soldier Company, out of the UK, and done some really great war games. We've been lucky enough, because Martin likes us, to be sent a copy of this game, which we haven't got to the table yet, because often we have more than 2 players. But Garth, we really need to get this one to the table.
Yeah, I got it in my sort of what is almost a daily delivery of games now on the front door.
Oh, you bragger.
So, no, look, I've opened it up. I've taken a look. It looks great. 2-player game plays in, what, 60 to 90, maybe 120 minutes.
I was going to say, I read you can play the whole Civil War in less than 2 hours.
Correct. So I'm looking forward to getting that to the table, and it's great to see yet another Martin Wallace succeed after, obviously, the success of Australia which only finished up not too long ago.
And this one was funded in about 2 hours or something like that, I think, really quickly. At the moment, it's over 60,000 with more than 1,100 backers. Still got 8 days to go, so by the time this podcast comes out, you should just be able to get onto it. But if not, it'll be out in retail. Beautiful-looking game. If you liked the Gettysburg, A Few Acres of Snow, those sort of war games that he's done before, he's got a really interesting take on the card-driven war game. That's Martin Wallace. He is a gem, and we claim him as ours now.
Yeah, as well we should, because that game, that looks, the box art alone looks awesome, let alone all the rest of the components.
It's a lovely-looking game. Now, I'm only going to mention this one quickly because I'm totally in love with it. I have heard that Trent has backed this game. That is... The Hellboy Kickstarter.
Mm.
Now, I think I mentioned it before. As soon as I saw the minis, I fell in love with it, and then I reminded myself, well, they're all painted professionally. That's why they look so great. But there's a buttload of minis in this game. It looks like an awesome game. It's got the genuine Mike Mignola stories as the campaign. I don't know what more to say. It's only around for another 8 days.
BFPD or whatever it is.
BPRD.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's raised over almost $2 million. So, Trent, I'm looking forward to playing that one.
Mm.
But, yeah, only about 8 days to go, so you better be quick on that one.
Oh, now, I'm very excited about that one.
Okay. So, Anno Domini 1666 is a game from Wargamer Games in Poland. It's a swashbuckling board game. I can't find it here. A swashbuckling board game of intrigue and mystery set in an alternative reality 17th century Vienna.
Woo!
Now, I've been to Vienna in real reality. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I reckon it's in alternative reality 17th century. It's pretty cool as well. It's well over 100,000, heading towards 200%. It's one of those dudes on a map, moving around adventure-style game with a campaign book full of scenarios. Lots of fascinating historical figures and things around about that time. It's to do with the Habsburgs and the Holy Roman Emperor and all that sort of medieval intrigue.
And there's a werewolf.
And there's some groovy miniatures, yeah. So if you're interested in that one, check it out. As I said, it's all these ones I'm talking about today, pretty much, they're all funded already, so you don't have to worry about them not turning up.
Well, that's a different story. Yeah. You can worry about that later.
Okay. Hey, you had a success story, Leon.
Yeah.
You got This War of Mine finally delivered to your front door.
I certainly did.
After how long?
About 18 months.
18 months. And having done what with your pledge?
I didn't fill out the pledge manager properly, apparently. But that's neither here nor there. We should probably not talk about that, aren't we?
Okay. Right. We've got much.
Okay. We won't talk
so
about
so much more to talk about.
You got refunded for it.
So, did I mention miniatures?
Yes.
You may have done.
Did I mention that so many of these games have got miniatures? Now, well, here are some... Here's a miniatures pirate game. Now, this one, Skull Tales, Full Sail. So, this is... one of many second editions that are appearing on Kickstarter these days, where they sort of went okay at first, so now they've come back bigger and better before. This one is absolutely massively bigger than it was before. So this is a pirate-themed board game in which you sail the seas in search of treasure, powerful enemies, and amazing adventures. So the original game was just called Skull Tales. This one's called Skull Tales Full Sail. They've already funded almost 500,000 Australian dollars with over 500 backers. 3,500 backers they're heading for. Now, Garth,
yep.
If you like your boards in a game, apart from having 52 minis, this one has a voyage board.
Okay.
Where you move around the Caribbean.
Yep.
It has an enemy boarding board where you fight between two ships. It has your ship management board where you manage your own ship. It has discovery boards about islands and lagoons. It has a mission board. It has a city board. It has so many boards, so many cards, so many minis, 52 minis of pirates and zombies. And
does it have a swabbing the poop deck board?
I'll swab your poop deck in a minute.
I bet you would have actually done that back in your day, wouldn't you have, Mark? Is that a thing you legitimately did in the Navy?
I've swabbed some poop off the deck, that's for sure.
I imagine you have.
To get this conversation back on deck... I really like the idea that there is the board of basically the Caribbean islands or what have you. So you've got that big scale, And then each player has their own little player board, which has the top-down view of their own ship. I think that appears to be an interesting little mechanic there. God knows how the game plays, because I have no idea.
There's so much to it. Look, graphic design, everything. The minis look really nice. There's so much. You are looking at about 200 Australian, including shipping, to get all this, but there's a lot of game in there.
That's Gloomhaven price.
A lot of stretch goals, yeah.
But if you like pirates.
Yeah, speaking of player boards, I'd just like to quickly mention out there to any budding game designers out there, if your game is basically tic-tac-toe, I still want my own player board. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yep.
Give me a player aid, give me a player board, or maybe design a nice two-in-one type of thing, and I'd be a happy man.
Okay.
There you go.
Anyway, that one's got 15 days to go. So if you're interested in pirates, minis, boards, boarding, poop, you can check that one out. Okay. Now, to take a break from the minis for a moment, I'm going to go to the RPG world. So this RPG, it's actually two RPGs mashed into one. This is Dream Askew, Dream Apart. And they're two beginner-friendly role-playing games of belonging outside belonging. I'm bringing some diversity to the show. So you get to tell a story about marginalized people living together in precarious communities. So in Dream Askew, that community is a queer enclave enduring the collapse of civilization.
Yeah.
And in Dream Apart, it's a Jewish shtetl?
Yeah, shtetl.
Sure. Shtetl, is that the word?
S-H-T-E-T-L.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a crack. We didn't.
It's the Yiddish term for basically a town full of Jewish people in Eastern Europe around the turn of the century.
Okay, cool.
A Jewish town in Eastern Europe.
Wow.
And so basically both of these are a no-dice system, a no-game master system, and they emphasise collaboration, shared ownership, and character-driven play. Now, when you first read it, you go, okay, this is great, you know, people are bringing diversity. But when you look at who's behind this, have you guys heard of Monster Hearts?
The name rings a bell, yeah.
So this was one of the first real successful indie role-playing games. I remember hearing about it probably about 3 years ago on Shut Up and Sit Down, and they raved about it. That's where you were playing, like, teenage monsters in love. And the game, it was like a GM-less system.
Yes, I do remember that.
So the designer of that system, Avery Alder, she is 50% of this team. The other 50% is Benjamin Rosenbaum, and he has had short stories that have been nominated for the Hugo Awards, the Nebula Awards, the Sturgeon Awards, Locus Awards, BSFA World Fantasy Awards, and his one of his stories was adapted into the South by Southwest 2010 Best Animated Short. So this guy is a very talented writer.
Mm.
So they're two of the they're the main two people that have put this together. It's only $13 for the PDF.
Nice.
$38 for the hardcore. They've already raised around $25,000 with over 500 backers, and it's already funded. So it's going to be produced. It's just launched, so they've got 32 days to go. So, look, if you're looking for something a bit left of centre.
Yeah, and the beauty of RPGs, especially like you said about this one, they're just not driven by a lot of, you know, there's probably not as many text because there's not, you don't need a DM and also no dice and stuff, and it's a PDF. The beauty of backing RPGs on Kickstarter is you actually get the damn thing, like, in a reasonable time, because that PDF could be ready to go. They could ship that out to you in, like, I haven't actually seen it, but they could ship that out to you in, like, a month or so from now. You just don't know. So it's well worth looking into those type of things.
Okay, the next one, back to minis. We've got Post-Human Saga. Post-Human Saga is a competitive tactical survival adventure set in the post-apocalyptic world of Post-Human. Now, Post-Human was the first game that was produced by this same company whose name escapes me. So it combines Euro mechanics with finely crafted story to create an experience that will challenge your system-busting skills while immersing you in a rich post-apocalyptic world. So this is a version 2 again, but it's got quite major changes. If you ever heard about the Post-Human game.
I almost backed
the
first Post-Human
game. I want to say I did back it and had my usual pledge manager snafu and just never got it, which is just my thing, apparently. Wow. It's how I roll.
That's nice.
Well, this one, a new version, lost my little notes here. So they've already raised over 105,000 with over 2,000 backers. Not 105,000. It's $105.
Oh, okay.
Australian plus shipping, about $20. Look, it looks really interesting. You've got a board and then you add tiles to create the map, so it's ever-changing. A lot of replayability. And like Wise. What's the other one I had? Crisis at Steamfall. From beautiful disaster games from Poland, and there's some amazing games coming out of the Czech Republic and out of Poland at the moment. It's a fantasy city exploration game set in a steampunk world with item customization, character mood control, and cooperative competitive mode with a modular tile board, exploration, alien technologies, and lots of steam-powered goodies.
All right.
And last one I want to mention, 1 week Ultimate Werewolf. Now, Leon, hello. You're an expert on all things werewolf. One night werewolf.
Yes.
What's 1 week werewolf? Do you know?
I've looked into it a little bit. I must say I have to do it a little bit more. But, yeah, it's just kind of an advanced version of One Night Ultimate Werewolf. So it takes a little bit longer. There's more components to it. There's these lovely little plastic chits and stuff you've got in the middle. And, yeah, but it's from what I can tell, they've put a lot of effort into it. And those One Night guys, they know what they're doing with their game design.
Well, Bezier Games seems to just make a habit of just going One night, 1 week, 28 days werewolf, 28 months werewolf. So,
well, they've got the legacy version of Ultimate Werewolf coming out soon, which correct. I can't wait to get into my Silver Bullet Society group. But we'll just go from there. But it's done gangbusters, as all these games tend to do. And I think there's a pledge where you can get pretty much everything they've ever done.
The funny little thing is it's apparently based in Ludwig's castle. And, of course, Bezier Games also have the castle of Mad King Ludwig.
Yeah, because there's locations and stuff as well as the character. So, yeah, it's all
good. So, look, there's probably a couple more I could speak about, but I won't because...
Like Fear Pong, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't want to touch that.
Come on, we've got to go to a song.
Okay.
All right. Are you done?
Well, I haven't even had a chance to mention Villages, the game that I backed while doing the research.
Well, you can talk that about off-air to us.
Okay.
So where the Dice Men Cometh, it's Ed Radio 99.3 FM. We're going to throw to a quick song, and then we can talk about some little thing called the Spielders Yara's nominations, if that's okay, gentlemen.
Sure.
I suppose.
We'll be back after this song.
Hello, everyone. Sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support The Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month, and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts, and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
That was Benjamin Booker with Right On You on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. If you want some physical games that you don't have to wait 18 months for, you can go in there right now and buy stuff, like a copy of these games we're about to talk about, which have been nominated for a little award.
Yeah, a little award.
The second biggest in the world.
Exactly right. So we are talking about the fact that only several days ago, 14th of May, the Spielders Yara's nominations were announced out of Germania. And I thought, everyone else is talking about them, so why shouldn't we?
Yeah.
We've only got a couple of minutes to do so. And look, we won't talk about the Kinderspiel because none of the games are gamers' games. For us gamers from gamers from Gamington.
Yeah.
And I haven't really heard too much about them. But look, let's talk about the Kinderspiel first of all, because that's sort of the... Look, we like to think of it as the gamers' game for hardcore gamers, but the reality is it's still... games that they need to sell off shelves in German stores primarily. They need to be bloody simple to learn. They just reward a lot of repeat play. They become a little bit more, I guess, intense as you play them. You know, you can play them immediately, but your strategy becomes apparent the more and more you play. Now, this is where my 4 years of high school German is really going to come into its own when I start by saying the first nominee is Ganz schon clever. Or Pretty Clever, as the English translation goes. Now, this is by Wolfgang Vorsch. Now, just remember that name. because this guy gone from not really designing anything to now designing several Spiel-nominated games. In fact, he is nominated for at least three in this particular year alone. So okay. His first one, Gunshon Clever, is a dice rolling game. Look, it feels kind of like Advanced Yahtzee.
Yeah.
You roll five dice, you choose three dice, they're all different colours, and there's a certain rule that you have to adhere to when you're selecting dice. Other players get to choose one dice. You've got each individual little scoreboard, and you do things with the dice. Whoever does the things with the dice the most successfully gets the most points, and they win.
Yeah. Quickly, just like 10 seconds, speaking of Yahtzee, we played Yahtzee the other night at the pub. Why did we do that, Garth?
Because someone didn't bring the complete version of Role Player.
No, he just brought basically a box with a big bag of dice and nothing else in it. So we played Yahtzee, which was horrific.
It was fun. I won.
Yes, because it was ridiculous.
I still won. So
anyway.
Look, again, it's such a luck-based game, this one, with a small bit of skill involved. So I don't know why it's there, but I'm not a German game reviewer. The second one, which is also,
to be honest,
by Wolfgang Vorsch, is Die Quacksalber von Quedlinburg, or The Quacks of Quedlinburg, where each player is a competing quack or a pseudo-doctor trying to create potions in your own individual cauldron of doctorness. You're trying to get different ingredients, you're trying to make things out of them, you're trying to get the most points, and again, pretty simple mechanics to be able to get the larger point salad coming out of this. Again, very Germanic in its style, and be interesting to play it, I must admit. But then probably the one that I'm most interested about is Heaven and Ale by Michael Kiesling and Andreas Schmidt. Mark's two favourite things, which are religion and alcohol.
And ale, yeah.
So you're playing as competing, I guess, monks or brew houses. It's like, you know, almost Franciscan in its history. You are trying to basically collect resources, collect monks, turn resources into ale and beers to get more victory points. I must say, it doesn't strike me as very pretty when you look at the board and the score sections. But again, is very simple, but probably for mine the most heavy out of these three games.
Yeah,
and this heavy is used very much in inverted.
Yeah, this is one. Look, I have been keeping my eye out for. I've seen a couple of secondhand copies floating around that I've almost grabbed. It's one that I think I might try and get to the table at BorderCon because I'm sure there'll be some copies there.
Hopefully.
Hint, hint. But yeah, look, the Kennis Bill just gets lighter and lighter. And look, contrast that. And one of our favourites, I must say, there is two other recommended titles, Clank,
yep,
which of course we love, and Pioneers. So I haven't heard much about Pioneers, but Clank, of course, we love. So it's great that that's got a nominee. But look at those. And then, now you guys, I'm ahead of you guys. You guys haven't played Azul.
No. So look, let's go quickly to the spiel because we've only got a minute to go. So the three nominees. First one, The Mind, which is basically a very simple deck of cards. You're trying to get the cards in a chronological order. If that happens, you get to do the next level and the next level and the next level. The interesting thing seems to be you can't talk while you do that because it is fully cooperative. You've then got Azul, tile laying game of tile laying by tile layers, which is the hotness all over the place. And then you've got Luxor, which is essentially you're trying to go into a pharaoh's tomb as far as possible. You've got a couple of interesting mechanics there where you've always got to play one of your five cards, but only the cards on the end. So you've got your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards. You can only ever play the one at the end. You'll collect a new card. It'll go in the middle out of the five, and the other two get pushed out to the side. So again, you've got Wolfgang Vorsch in there as one of the nominees with his game, The Mind. But again, it's like, Azul is probably the hot favourite,
which means
it's going to not win.
Yeah.
Would think that Heaven and Ale is the gamest of games out of all of those, which again mean it won't win. Mm. Pandemic Legacy Season 2 and Pandemic Legacy, Pandemic as a mechanic, got another award, or at least a special award, because of the indelible bloody footprint it's got on this hobby, which is richly deserved, whether or not we enjoy Pandemic Legacy personally. But we've got to go. We have got less than 10 seconds. So I have been Garth.
I have been Leon.
I've been Mark.
We have been the Dice Men Cometh. We are out of here to go and play a game, but we will see you again.
You've been listening to another episode of the Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.